All rise. The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Margaret Bartley presiding. All those who have business before the court, draw near and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Good morning. I'm Judge Bartley. On my right is Judge Allen, and on my left is Judge Meredith. We're here today for the matter of Tedesco versus Wilkie, docket number 18-1805. But before we get to that matter, the court is going to formally admit a new member, Ms. Renee Reasoner. She's one of my former law clerks, and she was a sergeant in the U.S. Army, 82nd Airborne Division, prior to being a lawyer. I want to turn things over to the court's general counsel, Carrie Sklar, who will move for admittance.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. As you know, I am a member of the bar of this court, and I am pleased to present to you this morning Ms. Renee Reasoner for admission to the court's bar. Ms. Reasoner is an attorney in good standing in her state bar of Washington, and I am confident she meets the standards for admission to this court's bar, and I therefore move that she be admitted to the court's bar.
Thank you, Mr. Sklar. Ms. Reasoner, raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear to conduct yourself as an attorney and counselor of this court, uprightly and according to the law, and that you will support the Constitution of the United States?
I do.
Wonderful. You are admitted to the court's bar.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. And congratulations. As I noted, we're here today for the arguments in the matter of Tedesco versus Wilkie. The issue before us has to do with the board's treatment of the criteria for a 60% evaluation under DC 5055, which is the knee replacement DC. Counsel for the parties, would you please state your name and your appearance for the record, beginning with appellant's counsel.
Susan Seidel, Winer University, Delaware Law School, Veterans Law Clinic for Mr. Tedesco.
Okay.
Beth Donaldson, law student at Wright.
Thank you, Ms. Seidel and Ms. Donaldson.
Ronan Morris for the Secretary and Ms. Christopher Wallace.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Morris and Mr. Wallace. Each party will have 30 minutes to present their arguments. Ms. Seidel, do you want to reserve a portion of your time?
Yes, I'll
reserve 10 minutes. 10 minutes, okay, Dawn. Okay, Ms. Seidel, you may proceed.
May it please the court. The denial of a 60% rating for Mr. Tedesco under Diagnostic Code DC 5055 is incorrect for two reasons. First, the VA equated limitation of motion with severe painful motion. And this court has held in two unpublished decisions, Allen v. McDonald and Hale v. Peek, that equating the two is not permitted under 5055. Mr. Tedesco asserts that the court's reasoning was sound and should be applied here. In Allen v. McDonald, this court stated that DC 5055 expressly differentiates between limitation of motion and pain, and the VA is directed to a limitation of motion only if severe painful motion is not shown. So under the 30% rating for limitation of motion, it's rated by analogy to 5256, which in this case is not relevant.
Okay, can I just stop you there? Because I saw that you made that same statement in your brief about the 430% you go to these other DCs, which are 526, 56 and 60 and 61 and 62. Now, can you just show me where you, how you're reading that under 5055?
So under 5055, the minimum rating is 30%.
Okay, so that means, what does that mean to you? And I'm going to ask Secretary's Council the same thing. I'm just trying to make sure we're starting from the same foundation here.
So I believe that means that after you have a prosthetic knee implant or replacement, that you are entitled to a 30% rating regardless of what kind of limitation or range of motion that you may have in your knee.
Even if you're asymptomatic?
That's the language on the page. That's how it reads to me, the language on the page.
Okay, okay.
And I believe that's how it's been applied.
Uh-huh, okay. And so the section right above that that talks about intermediate degrees of residual weakness, pain, or LOM, what do they mean by intermediate there?
Million dollar question. I'm not really sure what intermediate means. I would assume that it's equivalent to moderate. And I only assume that because for the higher rating, the language is severe. So less than severe is intermediate.
But more than 30? This is where I want to, you know, because you were saying for 30, they would refer to the limitation of motion under these other DCs.
So I think it would depend because you'd have to go to those DCs and look at the ratings there. So it might be 30. It might be something higher up to 50, I believe, under 5260 and 5261 and 5262. So if the claimant has less than that range of motion, it reverts back to 5055 for the minimum rating.
And for 30.
Right. And I think that the VA's and this court has been pretty clear that that's the case.
Okay.
I think that the problem comes in between the 30 and the 60.
Okay. Personally, I read it as for if you're asymptomatic, you get a 30, and that the I'm just kind of guessing here that the intermediate degrees referred to a 40 or a 50, but you know,
I think I agree with that.
Okay,
that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Okay. It was phrased differently in your brief, but I just wanted to get some clarity on that.
So when you're looking at the 60% rating for severe painful motion, it excludes any reference, any language to look at any other DC. So you need to rely on the language that is on the page for severe painful motion. But of course, it still needs to be consistent with 38 CFR 4.40 for functional loss, 4.45 for joints, and 4.59 for painful motion.
What do you mean by it has to be consistent with? I just want to make sure I'm on the same page with what you meant by that.
So all the factors that are laid out in each of those regulations go to, slightly different things, but pain and functional limitation. And so those factors also have to be examined. This court has said that the DCs don't stand alone, that they have to be taken in context with these sections on different types of limitations. If you look at those sections, they talk about, for example, 4.40 on functional loss, mentions normal excursion, strength, speed, incoordination, and endurance. And so those are all a type of functional loss, all a type of lack of limitation. They're different than range of motion. So a veteran could have a limited range of motion, or he could have a limitation of motion, but there's overlap there, but they're not one and the same. And I think in Allen v. McDonald, this court spoke about that and said that the board failed to account for evidence showing functional loss due to pain that did not necessarily manifest in measurable limitation of motion. So there's an acknowledgement that these two are different things. And in this case, the VA looked at range of motion, found that he didn't exceed what was in the 30% rating or in 52, 61, and 62, and stopped. And then if they had looked at these other types of limitation of motion, they probably would have come to the conclusion that he meets severe painful motion. Now, this court nor I can second guess what that finding would be, but I'm arguing that the proper criteria were not applied.
So if we sent it back and you were writing the board decision, let's say we sent it back for the reason that you target, they assumed that the severe painful motion was to be judged solely based on limitation of motion. That's why we sent it back. We say they did that wrong. So you were writing the board decision. How would you assess his severe painful motion? Is it? I know you were talking about the DeLuca, what we call the DeLuca factors. Is that kind of how your decision would write, or?
I mean, certainly DeLuca would play into it, but the entire record would need to be examined.
Yeah, but how do they determine whether he has severe painful motion?
I guess it's more than intermediate, but we have no definition for intermediate.
Well, but that brings us to the intermediate is somewhat defined in that little paragraph that we talked about that says, with intermediate degrees of residual weakness, pain, or limitation of motion, rate by analogy to DCs 52, 56, 61, and 62, those do have, you know, range of motion or ankylosis. Those have criteria for assessing the weakness, pain, or LOM.
So I think VA would have to look at 4.40, 4.45, and 4.59. They'd have to look at, under 4.40, excursion, strength, speed, coordination, and endurance. Under 4.45, they'd have to look at fatigability and coordination, pain on movement that affects stability, standing, weight bearing. And under 4.59, painful motion, such as crepitation, muscle spasm, and whether it's painful or unstable.
So I might be asking the same question as Judge Bartley, or perhaps it's slightly different. But so it is all focused on the word severe. Right? So I generically have trouble with these diagnostic codes that use those words, because it's they're undefined, and what might be severe to you might not be severe to me, right? So if you were going to argue to the board, right, the evidence in this record shows not just that Mr. Tedesco has painful motion, but that painful motion is severe, right? What evidence would you point to? And I'm just so you know, I'm asking that not because we would talk about that in the first instance, at least in my view, but that might give some context to what might be some parameters making painful motion severe painful motion.
So Mr. Tedesco has a long history of problems with both his knees, and there's an 8,000-page record. And throughout that record, there are statements from Mr. Tedesco. There are statements from his wife. There are statements from his doctors and from his physical therapists. I think all those things we need to be looked at and weighed. For example, his physical therapist stated that he has problems with excursion and he needs either a walker or a cane to walk. So I think somebody who's walking with a walker is probably going to have severe painful motion as opposed to somebody who needs no support whatsoever. They also noted that he has decreased speed and pain at rest. But I think you have to take the record as a whole and consider all of these things, none of which were actually considered because the board just looked at this measurement of flexion and extension and then stopped. Does that answer your question?
Well, probably as well as anybody can answer the question. The problem is, right, is that for me, if we start from the point that painful motion is different than limitation of motion, and we just put that aside, right, then, okay, we're at the 60% level, but it's not enough to have painful motion. We have to say that if we've got two people, right, how do we say one person's painful motion is severe and another person's is not severe? Because unlike the referred to diagnostic codes at the 30% level, right, you there's no measurement for severe, right? And so that's the struggle.
Right, and I think that struggle comes through in many, many, many different diagnostic codes with undefined, moderate, intermediate, severe. I don't know the answer to that either.
So, and I may have asked this a slightly different way before, but so given that, is it wrong for VA to look at the intermediate, how the intermediate degrees, under my view, that means 40 or 50%, you know, whether the veteran would get 40 or 50%. Is it wrong for them to look at those DCs that are, that they say are to be looked at by analogy to assess the weakness and pain and LOM?
So I'm not sure that it's wrong for them to look at it, but it's just one thing that can be looked at. And then all of these other factors from these other regulations also need to be taken into account. But solely relying only on meeting that adds an extra criteria that's not in the regulation. And so VA would be reading into a higher, more difficult standard for a claimant to meet than is in the regulation. And, you know, we need to look at the plain language of the regulation to see what VA meant by this. I think that VA asserts that the claimant's argument was that range of motion can't be considered at all, and that was not the veteran's argument at all. In fact, range of motion has to be considered under Correa v. McDonald. They're required to look at it, but again, it's just one factor, and they also need to look at, you know, the painful motion, the functional limitation, and 4.45 joints.
If the board was to look at the range of motion and say there's full range of motion, and as the secretary suggested, infer that means that there wasn't severe pain, is that a medical determination, or is that something that's within the competency of the board to decide, to say you have full range of motion, so you therefore don't have pain?
I think inferring that is not a decision that the VA can make. I think that is a medical decision. There's nothing in any of the regulations that say if you have full range of motion, you don't have pain. So I think that assumption is a faulty assumption. If, on the other hand, a medical professional did an evaluation and came to the conclusion that the person wasn't suffering from any pain, that would be valid. But that's not what happened here, because that never even got considered. The VA's considering it as a cumulative or a successive rating, so that you have to meet the lower one before you can meet the higher one. And again, there's nothing in the language of the regulation that states that. Now, there are plenty of other DCs where that is the case, like diabetes, for example. You're not going to get a higher rating, if you don't meet the lower one. You've got to meet all the criteria. But there's no such language here. And so VA adding that as a criteria, again, is adding more information, more requirements for the veteran than is on the page. And doing that guts the idea of 38 CFR 4.7, when there's two evaluations, the one that if it more closely approximates the higher one, that one needs to be applied. Reading this as cumulative would gut that idea altogether. Excuse me.
All
VA also failed to provide adequate reasons and basis for its decision. It dismissed all the evidence from the veteran and his doctors, relied on two CMP evaluations, one in 2010, one in 2016, and disregarded 6 or 7 or 8 years of other information, including statements from the veteran, statements from his wife, and more importantly, statements from his treating doctors and his physical therapist. And they just looked at a snapshot in time, and the reason they dismissed the other evidence was because of this finding that that he didn't meet this range of motion limitation. Had they correctly considered this, they would have looked at that. And they need to, VA needs to consider the higher rating. Anytime a veteran or claimant applies for something, it's assumed that he's seeking the highest rating. And by not looking at, did he meet 60% under the criteria of 60% and jumping just at 30%, they're not following the regulation as it's written. So in summary, I would say that the VA failed to consider the proper criteria when determining his rating, which resulted in error, and that error needs to be corrected, so the case should be remanded for the proper consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Seidel. Mr. Morris.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Your Honors, the criteria for a 60% evaluation under DC 5055, chronic residuals of a knee replacement consisting of severe painful motion, necessarily contemplates severe painful motion productive of some form of functional impairments.
Could you speak up just a little bit?
Or get closer to the mic.
Because I'm getting older by the moment, so.
The 60% criteria contemplates severe painful motion productive of functional impairment of the knee, and range of motion is a measure of the functioning of the knee, Your Honors. And I believe that there's three areas that provide context and inform us as to what the 60% criteria means. And I believe they start with the general statutes and the regulations that govern the compensation of disabilities, the Secretary's specific regulations with respect to the evaluation of joint disabilities and disabilities of the musculoskeletal system. And finally, Your Honor, I believe that the DC 5055 itself, including the other criteria, specifically informs us as to what the 60% criteria entails.
Wait, so just to summarize, what are you saying they should look at? You mentioned the DeLuca criteria. Right? Or did...
Roundabout.
Can you just go like 1, 2, 3?
Sure. The first would be the statutes and regulations that govern the compensation of disabilities generally, and that would be the statutes and regulations which speak to what disabilities are. Disabilities are the functional impairment caused by an injury, disease, or residual condition. And that is what we compensate. And compensation is based on the level of functional impairment, i.e. the level of disability and how it translates into an average impairment in earning capacity. So that would be number one, generally. Number two would be the Secretary's specific regulations governing the evaluation of joint disabilities and musculoskeletal.
Well, that's what DeLuca.
That would be 4.40, okay. 4.45, and 4.59 specifically. And the third, Your Honor, would be the diagnostic code itself. The language of the code and the language of the specific criteria.
Okay, so when the board made its decision, did it go through those three?
I don't believe that it falls on the board, that the board needed to explain what the criteria meant. The board's job was to apply that criteria, and the board did that. The board properly relied on range of motion or properly considered range of motion in its analysis of the 60% criteria, because again, severe painful motion contemplates functional impairment of the knee, and range of motion is that measure of the impairment.
But I understand your sort of cascading level of authority, because you've got the overarching system for disability compensation, you've got the special rules that apply across the board to joints, and then you have this diagnostic code. But seems to me the place to start is with the diagnostic code, because it does seem that what the board did is not quite the way that you framed it just a moment ago, because I think that would be right, which is considering range of motion as part of its assessment under the 60% level. It seemed to me the board equated the phrase limitation of motion with severe painful motion. In other words, it said it effectively treated them as the same. And so that's the problem that I have before we can get to the other overarching points is because the secretary crafted this regulation and within just two sentences of one another used two different phrases, we got a big hill to get over to say that they actually mean the same thing.
I don't think that the board equated them to mean the same thing, and I don't think that they mean the same thing. But if we're looking at joint disabilities and a disability of the knee, we know from the secretary's regulations what that is, and we know that that is the inability to move that joint normally. And knees flex and knees extend, they straighten and they bend. And so the range of motion, that flexion and that extension is clearly relevant to the evaluation of any knee disability. And this diagnostic code is no exception in terms of what it's looking to. And so when we're looking at that 60% criteria, we are looking for a severe level of impairment. And again, knees are impaired based on their ability to function properly as knee joints. Again, that knee only moves in those two directions. And so range of motion, again, is important. Sorry, were you?
Well, can we take a slight detour here or slow down a little? And I want to ask you the same questions that I asked Ms. Seidel about DC 5055. So talk to me about how you get a 30 and then what that little phrase above about intermediate degrees of disability means to you?
The diagnostic code itself, I mean, it presumes that, well, first, for the 1 year after you get the knee replacement, that you're going to be pretty impaired. And that after that year period, your impairment is going to go down. But it also assumes that there's going to be some residuals of that knee replacement. Note at that point that I do believe that this was written in about 1945, and so things may be different now, but nevertheless, it assumes that there's going to be a residual disability, and a residual disability that results in a 30% average impairment in earning capacity.
No matter what your condition actually is. That's
the nature of the rating schedule and the nature of average impairment is that, yes, it presumes that there's going to be an average impairment in earning capacity after that first year of 30%. Whether that is true or not is irrelevant. Whether this particular veteran, you know, is actually impaired is irrelevant because the code presumes mm-hmm. as much. And again, that 30% does contemplate, it's not for an asymptomatic disability. I believe it fully assumes a symptomatic disability because it's the symptoms that would result in the impairment in earning capacity. So we then get to the
I think I'm following I almost promoted you to Justice Bartley, Judge Bartley's questions, which is that, are you saying that there has to be some assessment of functional impairment or something 1 year after the knee replacement? So in other words, the hypothetical veteran who does not want the maximum benefit, and he just walks in and he said, I had a knee replacement a year ago, I was 100%, I just want my 30, but I don't want an exam, just give me my 30. Your reading of the diagnostic code, I thought, until the very last sentence was, yes, they get the 30, period, right?
Yeah, correct.
They
do get the 30.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, so there's no assessment.
No, there's no assessment. It is it's a presumption that there are residuals because the diagnostic code says,
and not a rebuttable presumption. It is just it presumes 30%, right?
You get absent the secretary severing the service connection, there would be no basis under this diagnostic code not to give a 30% evaluation for the for post knee replacement after a year. After that, we do move to the mid-range mid-range evaluations, which would be the intermediate degrees before we get to the 60%.
And those are what? Those are 40 or 50? Like, if the veteran wants to go above 30.
Those are 40 or 50, depending on the particular, which of the three enumerated codes is most analogous and most applicable in the situation. So you could get a 40, you could get a 50. And it is that level, you know, that would be what you get in that case. And then if we move to the 60% clearly requires a higher level of disability than what you would get under those mid-range evaluations.
But how is it measured? Right? I mean, I think what you're saying is that you then have to still use measurements like, extension limitation, et cetera. And so it would have to be greater than what would be on the intermediately listed diagnostic code. Is that what you're saying?
The level of disability would need to be greater. And I'll use a comparison for a moment. Is that so the 60% evaluation, and we're only focusing on the severe painful motion. There is the alternative, which is weakness, and that wasn't something that was argued in this case. So simply just looking at the 60% evaluation, by comparison, a 60% is the maximum rating that one gets for an amputation of the entire knee. A 60% is what one gets under, 52-56 for extremely unfavorable ankylosis, with the knee being stuck at a 45-degree angle. That is the level of disability that we're looking for in this 60% criteria, what that criteria is intended to capture. So what we
know. So how do you get there, though? So just that might be right, but what's odd about this to me is, you know, I'm picturing a person sitting down in 1945 and writing this. And they've written the 30% level where they say, I know how to do limitation of motion, and I know how to refer to another diagnostic code. And it's like they go to get a soda, come back and write the 60% level, and all of a sudden they've forgotten how to do both of those things. But, and I'm not suggesting this is what you're saying, but effectively your argument is they're accomplishing the same thing in an entirely different language.
They are using different language, but I think it makes sense because all of these codes, the ones that were referenced, as well as other ones that weren't referenced, they don't go higher than 50%, with the exception of that extremely unfavorable ankylosis. But measuring it under flexion doesn't even get you past, I believe, 30% in this case. You know, extension might get you to 50%, but so you can't just rate it by analogy. And so I don't know that it was a matter of.
But the ones that they referenced do go up high, like you, the ankylosis one, that's the 56, and the 61 both go higher than 50.
I think 61 only goes to 50.
50, right. So the only one of these that I believe goes to past 50% is a 60% for extremely unfavorable ankylosis.
Okay. So would in your view then, focusing just again, we'll leave aside weakness, okay? But so. Would there be any difference if what the diagnostic code said in your view at the 60% level for 55 is with chronic residuals with chronic severe residuals rate by analogy to diagnostic code 52-56?
No, because I don't believe that is the only way. That 60% is available. I don't believe that is the way that one has to get to a 60% rating under a DC 50-55. But you could
get there, but it wouldn't make a difference because you could get there under 52-56 anyways, right? So then what are the other things that the board looks at?
Well, I think overall it's looking for essentially the loss of function, the loss of use of the knee. Because again, if we look at comparative codes like an amputation or what extremely unfavorable ankylosis is, again, your knee stuck in a certain position, that's what the board is looking for. And so the evidence that would get you there would be evidence that essentially your motion, you have such severe painful motion that essentially your knee is useless as a joint. And that's how much it's impacting you. And so again, looking, you know, perhaps it works better to work both backwards and forward. Going through the 30% criteria, we know what doesn't qualify as a 60%, because we know that even the worst extension gets you to only a 50% evaluation. We know that ankylosis and flexion between 20 and 45 degrees only gets you a 50% evaluation. And we know that the worst impairment of the tibia fibula, non-union with loose motion requiring a brace, only gets you to 40%. So,
well, isn't this where we get to appellant's counsel's argument that these are disjunctive and not successive? I mean, so if they're not successive, then we're not looking at the one below, right?
Yes and no. It's a qualified answer that I have to this. One, I actually disagree. I do think that these criteria are successive. Not the analogous diagnostic codes, but I do believe the criteria itself, because this, the mid-range criteria is intermittent degrees of pain, weakness, or loss of motion. And the next higher is severe painful motion or weakness in the affected extremity. And so I do believe that those reasonably read mean that the first has that the second is a higher level of pain or motion or a disability associated with that or weakness than the.
But I agree with you that the words used are the same, but they are not phrased the same way because of this, the intermediate, which to me means a 40 or 50 and not a 60. Intermediate references weakness, comma, pain. They're not using serial commas here, but weakness, comma, pain, comma, or limitation of motion, three different things. But 60% references severe painful motion, comma, or weakness.
Because it has to be your worst limitation of motion under the codes that are referenced, again, doesn't even get you to 60%. So it makes sense that that word is not used in the 60% criteria. Because again, if we're rating it under limitation of motion, you would never get to a 60%. So what it's requiring is severe painful motion, which means to whatever degree the pain or, you know, the limitation of motion has to be more severe than what's contemplated under those lower codes. Because again, if what you have is contemplated by those lower codes, you wouldn't be getting a 60% evaluation. And to answer,
but do you agree with me that that's only true if they are successive? If we agree with you that they're successive?
No, because I think there's a second part to every diagnostic code, and that part is always successive, and that is the ratings, the numbers that are on the right side of that page. And we are going from a max from a 40 or 50% to a 60%. And no matter what, that criteria has to capture the level of disability contemplated by a 60%, which has to be greater than the level of disability of a 30%, you know, that would warrant a 40 or 50% rating. So we can't read the criteria for a 60% as requiring anything less than what's being required for an intermediate or a mid-range evaluation. And we know what the mid-range evaluations are based on. We know what that disability picture would effectively look like. And again, it depends on which one you use, but that would be, again, ankylosis, inflection between 20 and 40 degrees. That's a significant level of disability.
Well, I mean, why didn't they just say for a 60%, you know, they have for the 40 or 50 intermediate degrees of residual weakness, pain, limitation of motion, rate by analogy too. Why didn't they just use that language under 60 and give them a 60, you know?
Well, because rating it under any of those codes doesn't cause an average impairment in earning capacity commensurate with the 60% evaluation, with the exception of the maximum evaluation for ankylosis. But again, the secretary chose that was not the criteria to determine in all knee replacement cases. The secretary could have said, you need extremely unfavorable ankylosis, but clearly not every veteran has ankylosis when they've had a knee replacement. And so that wasn't the metric that the secretary used.
But when you rate by analogy, you don't need to have the actual condition. You just need to have the, you know, it's by analogy. You need to have some symptoms that are the same.
Correct. I think the secretary was simply leaving the window open beyond just rating something by analogy under that particular 60%. But again, I don't think that it's any less indicative of the fact that the disability level has to be so severe that it effectively renders your joint useless. Because again, looking at even the lower codes, looking at the percentage evaluation that you're given for an amputation, I think all of those things make clear what this was intended to capture.
So even if we agreed with your reading of the diagnostic code, what evidence was the board required to look at in making these determinations? Is it just the range of motion, or was the board supposed to consider the evidence that the appellant mentioned about lay and medical evidence of significant knee pain?
It's not significant knee pain that we're looking for in this case.
Even though the code says severe painful
motion. And I think the motion is critical to that, because the majority of the evidence the appellant cites is simply evidence of knee pain. And
did the board say that?
The board didn't, but I don't know why if the end result, what we're looking at for in terms of, you know, reasons or basis is, do we understand the basis of the decision? And the answer should be yes, because there is nothing in this evidence that indicates severe painful motion. Even the evidence, and the appellant noted, I think it was an 8,000-page record, yet our record of proceedings is approximately 100 pages, and that includes the board decision and the two examinations. So of those 8,000 pages, we don't have a lot of even potentially relevant evidence. And even of that which was cited, most of that either pertains to entirely symptoms entirely unrelated to the idea of painful motion, or simply not indicative of pain on motion at all. And another point that with respect to this is the appellant's argument, you know, suggesting in somehow that pain by itself, or even just an allegation of severe painful motion, would be sufficient. I think that's, it's made clear that that can't be the case. We know what the most extreme form of pain on motion that doesn't cause functional loss of the knee is, and that's commensurate with an average, a 10% rating under 4.59. So the Secretary's regulation makes clear what the average impairment in earning capacity is when all you have is a painful motion that doesn't rise to a level of any compensable degree under any of the diagnostic codes. And altogether, that's what the appellant's evidence indicates. And again, I think the starting point here is to remember that the appellant is starting with a 30% minimum rating. And a lot is contemplated by that, because that's not an insignificant amount of impairment contemplated by a 30% rating. I think the board's reliance on the range of motion was clearly appropriate, because again, we have to measure the functional loss of the knee somehow. There's nothing in this evidence that would suggest any greater level of an inability to use the knee. The board specifically relied on, in this case, on the examinations. Found, at worst, the flexion, I think, was 95, that there was no change in extension with or without pain, that there was no change in anything on weight bearing, that flare-ups wouldn't make a difference, that repetitive use doesn't make a difference. There's simply no evidence in this case for the board to have even had to have dismissed. We have affirmative evidence that there is no significant disability. And there not being a significant disability, we can't possibly meet the criteria for severe painful motion commensurate with a 60% evaluation. That's all I have, Your Honors. If there's no further.
I do have a question. In light of our precedent decision in English, why did you argue for affirmance on the DC 5257 issue?
I don't believe in any way that our position is inconsistent with the court's decision in English. I also believe that English came out after I filed the Secretary's brief in this case, if I'm not mistaken. But if not, I don't see any inconsistencies. English held that the board can't categorically favor objective medical evidence over lay evidence. And the board didn't do that in this case. The board acknowledged the veteran's symptoms. I feel like my knee is giving way and I feel unstable. The board cited to the tests that were performed, indicating that the veteran didn't have instability. And it explained that those tests were specifically designed to detect or reveal instability, that they didn't, and that they were administered by medical professionals. Significantly, I think, in English also, the court found that it wasn't just that the board had categorically rejected this. The court premised its decision largely on the fact that it felt that the board found objective evidence to be necessary in order to prove instability. And there was no indication in this decision that the board believed it was necessary. If I may on that point, though, did that answer your question?
Go ahead. Are you going back to the other issue?
Or no. I was just going to follow up a little bit more on this too. Is that I think one of the points that's overlooked, you know, in all of these cases is that the board didn't have to discredit the veteran's testimony in this case in order to find that there was no instability. The veteran's statements and the tests are in no way mutually exclusive evidence. The veteran felt unstable. The veteran felt that his knee was giving way, so he got tests. Those tests showed that he didn't have instability. Nobody has to discredit the veteran's statements. They remain 100% true, and the tests remain 100% true.
And how did the board choose between the two? Then, so, if each is 100% true,
because a diagnostic criteria is instability. The diagnostic criteria is not feeling of instability, a feeling of giving way.
Well, it's not tests that show instability either.
No, but that's true, Your Honor. But again, that is why we have tests, is because if somebody feels that they have some symptoms, if I say to you, I feel like my head is warm, I might have a fever, and then I put a thermometer in my mouth or wherever, and it shows 98.6 degrees, like, I don't have a fever. Doesn't make me any less credible when I said, I feel like my head is warm. Because again, the question is, do I have a fever? The question in this case is does the veteran have instability? And there are tests. That's why we have tests. That's why we have
medicine. Are you suggesting that lay evidence could never prevail, that it has to be an objective test?
No, I'm saying that there may be situations where if that is what there is, there's no tests that show that he doesn't have instability, then perhaps it could satisfy the evidentiary burden. But again, because it's circumstantial evidence.
But you're saying that the objective test would always trump a veteran's lay statements.
I'm saying that it's not mutually exclusive of the veteran's lay statements, that the board doesn't have to actually weigh them. I can consider it very true that the veteran felt that his knee was giving way. That's why he got tests. Those tests show no instability. The veteran doesn't have instability, and I don't have to make any finding with respect to the veracity of the veteran's statements. He felt his knee was giving way. All those tests show is that his feeling was not instability. His feeling might have been anything else, but it wasn't instability. Because we know it wasn't instability because we have specific tests on that point. I don't know if there's any questions on that, but given that we just did get into the fact of instability, I do want to note, though, that I don't believe that the issue was raised at the time in the brief, or that the issue came was raised to the extent that we needed to address it then. But it is the Secretary's position that one doesn't get separately rated for instability when their disability is rated under 50-55. Again, I don't think that it was raised at the time of briefing because I think that the issue of instability was easily resolved because the parent didn't have instability. But I do want to note the Secretary.
You're saying the board was incorrect in saying that there could be a separate rating?
That is correct. I do believe that the board misunderstood this court's own case.
Do we have the authority to review that determination?
Yes, it is because
isn't it a favorable, even if incorrect, determination? I mean, I'm not taking a position on the correctness of the issue, but I mean, it seems to me that if the board decided that it was going to provide this rating, and that was a favorable determination, the Secretary couldn't have appealed that.
No, and again, which is why, I mean, also, you know, perhaps not worth mentioning at the time, but yes, I do believe the court can review that because one, it was the board's interpretation of law, and the court can review questions of law de novo. Two, I believe to an extent the court is compelled to consider that because the court is charged with taking due account of the rule of prejudicial error. So I don't think that the court can let a legal mistake like that necessarily stand. But again, I don't.
What's your authority for saying this? That the veteran can't get a separate eval? Is that what you just said?
Yes.
Can't under 5257? Cannot.
Correct.
What's your authority?
Well, one, it doesn't fit it certainly doesn't fit under the general counsel's 1997 opinion.
Are we bound by that?
No. But for starters, it doesn't fit under that. And second, Your Honor, I don't believe that it fits under this court's case law either. I mean, the court's case law seems to suggest that you can be separately rated when there's an additional disability. And I think that, and we don't have an additional disability. We have one disability, and that is the residuals of a knee replacement. In fact, again, the veteran in this case is this diagnostic code provides for a minimum of 30% evaluation, and presumably it covers instability, given that that is typically the basis of getting a knee replacement in the first place. So again, we're giving a 30% evaluation, very different than what was at issue in Lyles, which I think is probably the most otherwise direct case on this issue. But again, I think this is a specific diagnostic code. A knee replacement is a very specific occurrence, and so the residuals of that are specific to that, and that's what we're rating under this diagnostic code. So I don't think, I don't believe that either under case law, under the GC's opinion.
So did you, I might have missed this because...
Don, would you add 2 more minutes?
This wasn't the direct, the main part of the show here, but did the Secretary make this argument in his brief?
I did not.
So if we were to say that the argument wasn't raised here and the board worked under the assumption that it that a separate rating was allowed, we leave for another day whether that is a true statement of the law, would that be okay?
Yes, Your Honor. Sure. I mentioned it only just to get the Secretary's position out, and I do acknowledge that it wasn't raised in the brief, and it wasn't raised in the brief because I believe that it was a derivative argument because the board found that there was no instability, and so I didn't think it was something that needed to be raised at that time. But yes, if there are no further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Morris. Ms. Siddell, rebuttal.
I'll be brief. So if I'm understanding Mr. Morris's argument, he's saying that the DC code is not successive, but it's successive because, and then walks us through looking at 5261 and 5262. But either it's successive or cumulative or it's not. I think to read in all of this, VA knows what to say, when it wants to say what it says. None of this language is there. He said the criteria is intended to capture amputation and ankylosis. That's nowhere in the DC code, in the DC. And finally, he says there's no way to measure, the only way to measure functional loss is by measuring range of motion. That's not true. We can measure how quickly somebody can move, the coordination, their instability, all these things that are listed in 4.40, 4.45, and 4.59. These are all other ways of measuring limitation of motion. Range of motion is just merely one of those things.
Could I just ask one question? Is there a reason you didn't submit English as supplemental authority?
I wasn't aware of it.
Fair enough. Do you, okay.
Thank you, Ms. Seidel. Okay, thank you both for your arguments. The case is submitted for consideration and the court is adjourned, and we will come down and greet counsel.
All rise.